You're listening to LawPod UK. It's a podcast that covers developments across all aspects of civil and public law in the United Kingdom. All the comments are current at the time of podcast publication. It's brought to you by the barristers at One Crown Office Row, and this edition is presented by Rosalind English.
The 29th of March 2019 seems a long time ago. In her latest episode of 2903 CB, Professor Catherine Barnard comments on the long transition period towards Brexit since the Withdrawal Act was implemented by the government in January this year, when we formally left the EU. It was this act that the Internal Market Bill was set up to amend, and it's the Internal Market Bill that's been debated in Parliament. In this latest catch-up on the transition period towards Brexit, Bonnie Soane asks Professor Barnard how we're going to sort out the border issues by the time we're finally due to leave the European Union in December 2020.
So what we're discovering is that borders are difficult and complicated. And we've discussed this endlessly on this podcast. How do you avoid having a hard border between the north and south of Ireland when the north is part of the United Kingdom, which is leaving the European Union? Answer: the only way to do it is to have some sort of border down the Irish Sea. Problem is that Boris Johnson has said there will be no checks on goods moving from east to west, i.e. from Liverpool to Belfast. But, of course, the EU requires that. The EU is worried about a couple of things. In particular, they're worried about goods coming from Great Britain going into Northern Ireland and then going almost immediately on into the south. And remember, it only takes just over an hour to drive between Belfast and Dublin. So there is a risk that any goods coming from Great Britain going into Northern Ireland will end up in the south in two shakes of a lamb's tail. And the EU wants to stop that. How do they do it? By putting in checks. But of course, the UK doesn't want that.
When Boris Johnson signed the withdrawal agreement, he boasted that it was an oven-ready deal. Brexit was down, dusted and done. Why have these problems arisen now? Couldn't they have been foreseen?
Absolutely. They were foreseen. Lots of people talked about them at the time. And that's why Theresa May, possibly against her better judgment, said that the UK as a whole would stay in the EU customs union. And that would avoid this problem of having a border down the Irish Sea. Now, she said that no self-respecting government would allow a border down the Irish Sea because of the risks of checks and duties being applied on goods going from GB to Northern Ireland, i.e. going from Liverpool to Belfast. And that's why, probably through gritted teeth, she proposed that the UK as a whole stayed in the EU customs union. Boris Johnson said that's totally unacceptable. He negotiated for Northern Ireland effectively to have a foot in both camps, i.e. to stay in the UK customs union, but also de facto to be part of the EU's customs union. And that creates problems, namely the border down the Irish Sea. And lots of people said this at the time, but those problems were brushed under the carpet and thought to be resolved through the joint committee. And now, of course, they haven't been resolved, and this is crunch time.
Now, you referred earlier to the government's new internal market bill, which is indeed going through Parliament at the moment. It had its second reading in Parliament. Opponents of it suggest it's breaking international law. Indeed, the Northern Ireland Secretary, Brandon Lewis, shocked MPs this week when he said that it does break international law in a specific and limited way. It gives ministers powers to make regulations about state aid and customs procedures for trade from Northern Ireland to GB, as you've just said. This would allow ministers to make regulations inconsistent with the UK's obligations under the withdrawal agreement. If the negotiations had been going well, Catherine, surely we wouldn't have needed the Internal Market Bill.
Actually, the Internal Market Bill does two things. One, it creates an internal market between the four nations of the United Kingdom. And that had been foreseen. There'd been a consultation paper. I should say that's not popular with the Scottish and Welsh governments, but that's for another day. But suddenly, at the 11th hour, bolted on to the Internal Market Bill were these very unexpected provisions dealing with the Northern Ireland Protocol. And they're unexpected because they weren't in the consultation paper, and they were unexpected because they do lead to a breach of the withdrawal agreement. And the breach comes about in three ways. One, they give ministers powers to not impose exit checks on goods going from Northern Ireland to GB. Two, because they give ministers powers not to apply the rules, EU rules on state aid, and not to comply with the judgments of the Court of Justice in that area, again, expressly envisaged by the Northern Ireland Protocol. And three, they take away the direct effectiveness of the relevant provisions of the withdrawal agreement. Direct effect, as you'll recall, is about the enforceability of EU rights, and they've turned it off for those specific provisions. And these, of course, are powers, so the ministers don't need to exercise those powers, but if they do, they will be in breach of the Northern Ireland Protocol. And Brandon Lewis said that in Terms last week.
And Boris Johnson has watered down his language somewhat, but the bill did get through its second reading in Parliament. So storm in a teacup. Only 30 Conservative MPs abstained, two voted against, and the bill passed its second reading with a majority of 77, despite five former Prime Ministers, I'll run through them, Blair, Major, Brown, May and Cameron, Conservative and Labour, condemning it. So storm in a teapot. It's going to go through, isn't it, this bill? Even if there's an amendment, Bob Neil, his amendment, it's not going to make much difference. The government might amend its own bill just to sneak it through. But with a 80-seat majority, the Conservatives can more or less do what they want.
They can, and particularly now with the DUP also voting with the Conservatives on this issue. I think it's more complicated perhaps than that, because you've got very clear statements from former Prime Ministers and heavyweight lawyers, including Brexiteers, who have concerned about the potential breach of international law. Remember too that it was second reading yesterday where the vote is on the general principle of the bill, and lots of people think we do need the internal market bill to regulate relations between the four nations of the United Kingdom. The committee stage votes will be more interesting because they will look at the detail, particularly of Part 5, which contains these powers to reverse aspects of the Northern Ireland Protocol.
So how serious is this breaking of international law? As I said, five former prime ministers. You've got people in America, Nancy Pelosi, also saying, well, you know, why should America sign a trade deal if the Democrats come to power with Great Britain now because its word can't be trusted? How serious is this? You're an international lawyer. You work with other international lawyers. What was the reaction when that was announced?
I think we would say that the legal community is shocked, because there's both a point of law, that international law is there to be respected, it's part of the rule of law, and indeed it's a treaty, not some ancient treaty which has whose use has disappeared into the mists of time. A treaty that was signed by this Prime Minister 10 months ago is being breached. So there is a real shock. That said, for many people on the Conservative side, they say, of course we can breach this withdrawal agreement because we are a sovereign nation. And I think it's important to understand the thinking behind this and to think about Section 38 of the EU Withdrawal Agreement Act. That's the act I talked about at the beginning. And that act says Parliament is sovereign. Now, when that clause was included, a lot of people thought that that was a statement of the obvious. We've always known that Parliament is sovereign. But for Brexiteers, they see this as absolutely crucial, that Parliament of today, through the Internal Market Bill, can repeal aspects of what Parliament of yesterday, through the EU Withdrawal Agreement Act, decided. And they say the fact it breaches international law is neither here nor there. Domestically, we can do that. And that's absolutely correct. The problem is there is a legal dimension, because the EU can start proceedings against the UK for not complying with the withdrawal agreement. But there's also a political dimension. The UK has long been an advocate of the rule of law on the international stage, and we have criticised China and Iran for not complying with their international obligations. How can we have the moral authority to do that when we ourselves have turned our back on an agreement that we entered into a matter of a few months ago?
And even if Boris Johnson and his government never have to use these clauses that would break international law, as Brandon Lewis has admitted. Is the UK's reputation shot internationally? Some people say it is, just because we've considered it.
That's right. There's a debate amongst lawyers about whether just giving yourselves powers is enough to breach international law or to breach the treaty. There's some EU case law which suggests that actually even an anticipatory breach is enough. And the puzzling thing about all of this is that what seems to have spooked the government and led to this very late minute change of heart is that the EU has threatened that Great Britain will not have third country status in respect of SPS products, i.e. sanitary and phytosanitary products, products of animal origin. And lots of countries have third country status, and it was always assumed that Great Britain would have it too, because of course our laws are currently aligned with EU rules. It looks like the EU's threatened that that's not the case, which is why the UK has retaliated in this way. But the puzzle of all of this is that, as we said earlier, this bill only deals with West East relations, i.e. exit declarations on goods going from Northern Ireland to Great Britain. It doesn't deal with East-West relations, goods going from Great Britain to Northern Ireland. That's the thing that Boris Johnson is worried about the checks, the tariffs. And it's also the Internal Market Bill isn't responding to the very specific issue, the very specific threat that the EU has just made. So the whole thing is riddled with inconsistency, and that makes it even more complicated.
So going back to my initial question, Brexit going well then, Catherine? And I mention it in relation to how much do the characters involved in these negotiations matter? Sir David Frost as the chief negotiator for the UK and Michael Barnier for the EU. Does that mean that they're not getting on, or is it gameplay? The EU never does anything until the last minute, and this is all part of its tactics to outwit the UK negotiators.
Of course, it's tactics. We are at the most sensitive stage of the negotiations. Michel Barnier has said a deal's got to be done by the 30th of October. Boris Johnson says the 15th of October. I mean, this is a high wire act, or to put it another way, it's a game of chicken, but with very, very high stakes at play. Personalities, well, I suspect Michel Barnier would like to be able to get a deal. He sees himself as a deal maker. David Frost, I'm less clear about. I think I would say that David Frost is firmly subscribed to the school of sovereignty, and that we're a sovereign state and we shouldn't be kicked around or pushed around by the EU. So it's not at all clear to me that there is sufficient appetite for a deal to be done. There was a slight hint this morning that there's been a small bit more progress on the talks this week, but we just don't know because there's some big issues still at play. But I think I would say that it is really important that we get a deal, even if it's a bad deal. Because if we don't have a deal, the trading on WTO terms is very serious for the UK. No other major trading nation deals solely on WTO terms. And if there is no deal, the acrimony between the two sides will be significant, and it will make it very difficult for a resumption in talks, because that will have to happen to take place next year or the year after.
And so what do your spies in the EU tell you about? Because lawyers like to chat to one another late at night, I imagine, or early in the morning. But what do your spies in the EU tell you about possible legal action against the UK for even contemplating breaching its own withdrawal agreement and international law? Surely it's not just going to stand by.
No, quite the contrary. There's talk that the EU will start enforcement proceedings under Article 258, which they can do even though we have formally left the EU. There are powers in the treaty to do that. And if they don't act immediately, they wait till the 1st of January at the end of the transition period, they can trigger the dispute resolution mechanism. And that is of a different order of magnitude. That involves consultations and then arbitration. But if the arbitration panel thinks the point of EU law is at stake, off it goes to the European Court of Justice. And that will have the Brexiteers deeply concerned that the Court of Justice will have a say over the withdrawal agreement. So absolutely, there is a lot of talk that the EU will not just take this lying down, will act. And of course, it's another way of upping the ante.
And so no deal. Does that look likely? At the end of December, you said that WTO terms wouldn't be good for us. You just said that. But on the other hand, it is looking as if the no-dealers are winning. And then what do we do? Canadian type agreement?
Yes, so it does look like the no dealers are winning at the moment. I'm an optimist. I still think there is a chance that something will be salvaged from this mess. And even if it's only something very thin, as I said, in my view, a bad deal is better than no deal, contrary to what Theresa May used to say. It will at least leave the door open for future negotiations so that what eventually is decided looks more like the Canadian deal.
I think we might leave it there, but 2903 CB, your 21st podcast, Professor Catherine Barnard. You're now a member of the British Academy. Congratulations. But we could be going on into 2021 as well.
I think there may be a further chance to do that.
But one thing, anybody having their cake and eating it?
Oh, yes. Well, that's what Boris Johnson is trying to do. He wants his cake. I suspect he probably does want a deal, but he wants to eat it as well. He doesn't want a border down the Irish Sea. As we know, very difficult, unless with the magic of some sort of trade deal, those problems can be overcome.
But I can't help saying this. Theresa May must be hopping mad. Indeed, you know, she gave that very powerful speech in the Commons last week about the internal market bill and her shock and disapproval of the clauses within it that break international law, but she never wanted to see the border down between the UK and Northern Ireland, did she?
That's right. She said no government could possibly agree to that because it's carving off part of the union from the rest of Great Britain. And she's always, as a unionist, she's always rejected that as a possibility. But that seems to be a real likelihood, unless the UK goes as far as reneging on all of its commitments under the Northern Ireland Protocol, in which case Northern Ireland is not hived off from Great Britain for trade purposes, but inevitably it will lead to a border, a hard border between the North and the South, the very thing that the last 3 years of talks have been trying to avoid.
LawPod UK is presented by Rosalind English and is produced by One Crown Office Row. For more editions of LawPod UK, you can subscribe to the podcast and recommend us to a friend.